Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Intellectual Property Practice Group, was recorded on Monday, April 28, 2014, during a live telephone conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members. Welcome to the Practice Group telephone conference call. Today, our topic is patent protection, patent revision, patent litigation, and who decides. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call, and as always, we're recording the call for possible use as a podcast in the future. We're going to hear from a single but important expert today. He's Chief Judge Randall Rader. He's just learned that he's been called away to a meeting that begins at 2:20, so our call will adjourn promptly at 2:20. As I mentioned, he's the Chief Judge of the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. His complete bio is on our website and was included in the notice of today's call. He's going to give us very brief opening remarks, and then we're going to proceed right to questions from the audience. So please be ready with your questions. And with that, Judge Rader, go right ahead.
Thank you, Dean, and thanks for inviting me to speak just a moment on patent policy and its influencers. And I think we can all perceive that there are many of these influencers. There's Congress, there's the executive branch, primarily through the Patent Office and the Commerce Department, although there have been some other players recently. The president himself has been a player, and we have new entities such as the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, which will participate. And then, of course, there's the judicial system, which has a great role for the Supreme Court, the Federal Circuit, and the district courts, although there's probably 10 to 15 of those district courts that are the predominant contributors to the patent policy debate in this area. All of them contribute, and at various times they contribute more or less, but I would hope that they'd all have the same long-term goals of furthering the nation's innovation policy. With that, why don't we go to questions, Dean?
Very good. If you joined us late, Judge Rader is with us, but only for another 15 or 20 minutes or so, so we're going to proceed right to audience questions. In a moment, we'll hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After you hear that announcement, if you have a question for the judge, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. So once again, if you have a question for our guest today, Chief Judge Randall Rader, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. And while we're waiting to see who rings in, Judge, let me ask you. It seems, only fairly recently that the America Invents Act was passed and it's still being implemented. I'm wondering if you can shed any light to a novice like me on what might be the impetus for the present legislative effort on patents and IP. I understand there's some effort at litigation reform, balancing, restriking the balance, I guess, between protecting property rights and policing patent trolls. Do you have any views on that? And if so, you want to share those with us?
Well, I can give you some general thoughts.
Sure,
that,
sure.
You know, the patent system is not immune to the litigation abuse, which is bedeviled some of the other areas of our law, like torts and products liability, and probably large antitrust cases and other things of that nature. There is a sense of litigation abuse, and it's been particularly acute in some of the patent areas, and that's, I think, led to a desire for Congress to step in and find ways to address that.
Okay. We do have several callers with questions now. So if you joined us late, we have the judge, but only until about 20 after. So I'm going to ask folks to make their questions as crisp and concise as possible, and we'll get to as many of you as possible.
Yes. Hello, Judge Rader. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can.
Yes, hello. My name is Alex Lawson. I'm a reporter with Law 360 in New York. Thanks for holding the call today.
Sure.
You just made clear what the impetus is, for this sort of new legislative effort. To the extent you followed the varying drafts of bills that are working their way through Congress, one even passed the House. I mean, is there one sort of one provision or one portion of the legislative effort that you think would be a help to the abuse of the patent litigation system, whether it's fee shifting or higher criteria for demand letters, or do you think that the judiciary is capable of sorting that stuff out on its own?
Well, first let me say that I think the judiciary is probably the best tool to deal with this, because we can see abuse. We know abuse. This is our job to address abuse. And so when we see it, we can dive in and take the right steps, usually, by the way, at the district court. I'm saying we, but I think I'm speaking on behalf of district court colleagues more than the federal circuit at that point. But so I would prefer to see the judges doing it. But and your question specifically was what legislative provisions. I think there's probably some value in the higher standard for demand letters. And I also think that the fee shifting can be a very good idea in the proper case.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Sure.
We've got three more callers with questions pending, so let's take another call.
Yes, I wanted to thank you for sitting with us today and giving your insight.
Sure.
A number of states have started to express concerns as well. Now, patent law, of course, falls under the federal guidelines, and most state actions will be preempted. But states like Vermont have taken action for bad faith actors. I wanted to know what your thoughts were on where states can act, or if there's anything that they can do at all. Thank you.
Well, that's a little difficult question for me to get into too much detail on, because I could foresee that a preemption issue may come before us, meaning the patent code is really enacted under the Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 8, which makes the patent system federal. And so the federal government is the one that sets patent policy, and to the extent that states are involved in patent reform, that would probably give rise to some kind of a preemption lawsuit. So I don't think I can go too much more than to say that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Once again, we're talking to Chief Judge Randall Rader for a limited period of time today, just till 20 after the hour. We've got two questions pending. If you want to join the queue, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Let's take another caller.
Thank you, Judge, very much for joining us. Matt Johnson with McBee Strategic. Do you see high damages demands as part of a business model based on abusive litigation? And how can the patent community help the law develop to bring damages demands more in line with the value of patented technology?
Well, this is an area where I think the Federal Circuit has done some really excellent work at providing some guidance on how best to set reasonable royalties and other damages theories that will make it more difficult to inflate beyond expectations the value of an invention's contribution to a particular field of art. That's what we're really looking at, is what that invention has contributed to the field of art and the economic impact of that. So it's economics and technical at the same time. But the Federal Circuit, in several recent cases. Lucent comes to mind, and RescueNet and LaserTech has, I think, set out some standards that have improved the damages calculations.
Once again, if you have a question, we've got plenty of time left now. Push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. We have just one caller pending. Let's go to that caller.
John Rowland, Constitution.org. I'm from Texas, where the town of Marshall hosts a federal court that takes so many patent cases that for the residents of Marshall who serve on juries in those cases, jury service has become something of a cottage industry. But there's another point that should be addressed in any policy discussions on this, which is that the purpose of patents was to promote the advancement of science and the arts. It was not to retard it. And it should be considered an abuse of a patent that is used to suppress production of something, perhaps in preference is an anti-competitive measure, and perhaps a rule should be established that if a patent is not used to protect production, that the field is thrown open for someone else to produce it and pay a royalty to the patent holder, but where it may not be used to prevent production.
I think that's kind of what the whole thrust of the Patent Act is. We ensure that a patent is a non-obvious advance over all the prior art. We ensure that it's fully enabled, meaning that anyone can make and use the invention as claimed. We then require very clear claim construction to be done by the judge in a Markman proceeding to specify precisely what that advance is in the field and how it is furthering innovation, to use your kind of catchwords. And then, of course, we set damages that are keyed to what that advance is and what is contributed to the marketplace. So I do think if we know how the patent system is designed to work, it's doing exactly what you're suggesting. Thank you, though.
All right, we've got two questions pending. Let's take another call.
Hello, Judge. This is Alex Lawson again from Law 360. As a way of when I asked my earlier question about the legislative efforts, you said I have just kind of a more pointed direction of that.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm reminded. I didn't cover, but a colleague of mine covered some remarks you made. I think it was like last November at the Texas branch, the Texas Bench Conference, and you sort of made some pretty firm statements about, you know, sort of telling the Congress to basically proceed with extreme caution on drafting new rules for this stuff. And while you have made clear today that you still think that the judiciary is the best sort of tool against abusive patent litigation, do you think that, do you have an opinion on the current legislative effort afoot? I mean, do you think that they should hold off entirely now, or do you think that there's at least some role for them to be drafting new rules in this regard?
You know, it's not my role to advise the Congress. I think that the thrust of what I said in the Eastern District of Texas Judicial Conference is that I thought that judges who have this expertise in trial management, and we know who abusers are and how they act, we'd be the best ones to deal with litigation abuse. That was the thrust of my remarks. And I think I stand by that, as feeling that the trial judges are our best hope in this area.
Okay.
But thanks. Good question.
But is there any room for the lawmakers in that process at all? Sorry to double
up.
Here.
I think sure. I'm I think there's room for them, as I suggested earlier.
Okay.
I think there's at least a couple of provisions that may have some real merit. I think I mentioned
and you had mentioned them. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Once again, we've got about 5 minutes left. We're losing Judge Rader at about 20 after if you joined us late. So if you have a question, you need to push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. We've got just one question pending, so let's go to our next caller.
This is David Applegate, a private practitioner in Chicago, Judge Rader.
Yeah.
In your response to John Rowland's question, you mentioned district courts performing very clear claim constructions. I've heard the view expressed by a number of district court judges that they think they have about a 50% probability of being reversed by the Federal Circuit when they perform their claims constructions, and there's some frustration at the amount of resources that go into coming up with those determinations. Do you think that there is any chance of imposing a more deferential standard of review, at least with respect to the factual underpinnings of what the invention contributes to the art, as opposed to the clear legal claims construction, which obviously is an issue for of law, which is reviewed de novo?
Well, I think that precise issue is before the Supreme Court right now in a case that they have already taken, and it's in the briefing process. And so you ask, is there any hope? Well, when the Supreme Court is working on the issue, that probably is a good hope.
All right, we do have one more caller. Let's check in with another caller.
Hello, Judge Rader. This is Parker Hancock. I'm a law student over at Vanderbilt.
Okay.
And I had a quick question about, particularly in terms of influencers of the patent system, startup companies. Now, we've talked a lot about litigation abuse and damage calculation, but for these kinds of companies, just the ordinary cost of litigation can be very burdensome, and I know a lot of them try very quickly to outrun a pending patent suit. Do you think there's maybe room for a legislative solution to create space for small companies that may not even be able to bear the ordinary cost of litigation?
I think that's one of the things we discussed earlier, that the legislation does put higher requirements on these demand letters that that are the basis for some of these lawsuits starting.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
We've got a couple minutes left, Judge, and it looks like we don't have any questions pending. But let me give you a minute or two to wrap up. And in doing that, you know, you've been at this for some time now, the chief on your bench. I wonder if you and you've taught worldwide intellectual property. Have you seen any changes in views on intellectual property among your students or among the general population? If you want to talk about that as you wrap up.
Well, you know where I want to say that I've seen some real changes and improvement is in the way our district judges are dealing with these issues, much more aggressively pursuing the abuse category. We've heard about the Eastern District of Texas. Well, if you're following our area of law, you'll know that the chief judge down there, Leonard Davis, who's a magnificent judge, has just put in place a new order that will allow expedited, quick procedure in advance of the expenses of discovery in many cases if he perceives that there's abuse. And the parties can bring that to his attention through a motion, too. So, and Delaware is taking similar steps to clamp down on abuse. So if there's a change that I'd like to extol, it's in the awareness and willingness of district judges to really handle this problem.
Well, terrific. Well, Judge, and to our audience, let me say, if you've joined us late, we're losing the judge here now. He's been called to a judge's meeting. Even a chief judge is not always in charge of his own schedule. But, Judge, I want to thank you.
Not this time.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate your time, appreciate your sharing your expertise with us here today. To our audience, thank you for joining us as well. We do have a telephone call scheduled tomorrow when we'll be discussing two Fourth Amendment cases and how they concern warrantless searches of cell phones and cell phone call logs. That is tomorrow. But until then, we are adjourned. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Dean. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.